A big oil company gives up on the Arctic for now. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. There's news that Royal Dutch Shell is throwing in the towel on further drilling in especially environmentally sensitive parts of the Arctic. Shell has spent about $7 billion looking for fossil fuel up north, but results from an exploratory well about 80 miles off the Alaskan coast haven't turned up all that much oil or gas. But that is not the whole story. BBC business reporter Marie Keyworth is following this from London, where Shell is headquartered. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning.
So Shell had invested a lot of money in this Arctic exploration. Why is the company pulling back now?
Ostensibly, from the outset, they say they haven't found enough oil and gas at the test well that they've just been drilling this summer. And because of that, they say that it's not really very viable cost-wise for them to continue. On the other hand, they've also done a nod, really, to the regulatory environment in America at the moment. If one administration can give the go-ahead to something as controversial as this, it could be reversed by the next and therefore not really be seen as worth it for these big oil companies that are trying to make money out of it.
But all this against a backdrop of low oil prices that makes exploration in perhaps more expensive parts of the world to look for oil less economical.
That's exactly right. All of this means that whenever an oil company is making investments, they're going to get a much smaller return than they did even a year ago. And if you look at the language that Shell was using a year ago, they were talking about how exciting it was, this huge basin with a huge potential, perhaps 4.3 billion barrels of oil in it. And they were ploughing a lot into it. And then a year on, they're saying that they're just going to not do it. Basically means that the juice isn't really worth the squeeze anymore.
Marie Keyworth at the BBC, thank you.
You are welcome.
Volkswagen says it's working on a timetable to tell customers what it's going to do about its cars with small diesel engines that the company rigged to pollute at sometimes 40 times the legal limit. Two German publications over the weekend noted that VW may have had early warnings about the problem, a 2007 letter from a supplier, and in 2011, a VW engineer raising an alarm. There's also concern that the newest U.S. copyright law might prevent researchers from detecting problems in the future in cars. If you miss our coverage of that on the air, it'll be at marketplace.org later this morning. Now to a story about new charges for baggage on Amtrak. It's probably not what you think when you hear that, as Sally Herships reports.
Before we get to trains, let's talk planes. What you can take on them without paying extra. Practically nothing. But you can bring 250 pounds of luggage on Amtrak. Rod Diradon is a transportation expert.
That's much, much more than any airline.
But not enough. Amtrak says that's the problem. Passengers are bringing that plus more.
It isn't so much a revenue generator as it is a baggage-based control device.
And that's too bad, because Diradon says the system needs more revenue. When it comes to per capita investment in transportation, the U.S. is way down on the list of industrialized countries. Stuart Sproul is with Landor, a branding firm. He says Amtrak will still have to tread carefully when announcing the charges so passengers don't panic. But at the same time,
I don't really think that it's going to make them less attractive to the average person who uses their services.
Not when compared to the other option, standing in line at airport security. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Life is easy for market analysts these days. I mean, if stocks go down, you blame the Fed. If they go up, you credit the Fed. I mean, how is this very old news that rates are going to go up at some point in any way market sensitive? Marketplace regular and Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan has been pondering this. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, David.
The whole thing is a bit curious because it's not a surprise that the Federal Open Market Committee is considering raising interest rates for the first time since 2006, yet we keep acting like somehow it's coming out of left field and there might be some sort of shock when it happens.
I mean, the Fed is important. It's not like it doesn't exist, but the idea that we have to parse every word, every utterance, every this, every that. It's just ridiculous. There's a whole Fed industry, some of which involves, if you'll forgive the expression, the media. And what I've suggested that people do is just tune all of this out and wait and see what happens and not get caught up in the obsession of the moment.
But the one thing is, we have to remind ourselves, this decision on the arc of interest rates, this is the one thing that unites this too often divided country that we live in. It affects young, old, Democrat, Republican, disabled, able-bodied. You know, when interest rates start to rise, it'll affect everybody's pocketbook.
Right, but it'll affect it in different ways. Someone like me who is not borrowing but has savings, I'll probably be better off. I mean, forgetting the effect on society, I personally would be better off if interest rates rose. My children, on the other hand, might not be. It's all very complicated. And to translate, again, all of this into this is happening in the stock market because the Fed is going to do X or Y is just silly.
The Fed and momentary movements of the stock market is one thing. But the Fed, if it decides to raise rates too quickly, they might hurt the recovery. I mean, that's a legitimate discussion.
Well, all of this is a legitimate discussion, but it's all very esoteric. And it's not at all clear how much impact everyday stuff has.
Alan Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Alan, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
From Montclair State University today, as our New York studios get a version 2 upgrade, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.